Hi, welcome everybody. This is Janet Foster, and welcome to the Janet Foster Show. This is our first show of the year, new year, and we are so glad to be back. And just like before, we're going to keep bringing it to you, bringing you, real talk for real action. And right now, you can get social with me on Twitter at Janet D. Foster and on Instagram at Janet D. Foster, and of course on Facebook at Janet Foster, and I'll actually be taking your live tweets right now. So you are listening to We Play Radio, and as a part of the We Play Radio family, we are a very unique collective, and we're so happy to be here and to kick off this year. And what I want to do is kind of talk about today's topic. It's something that, it started to really heat up in 2015. And unfortunately, it seems to still be one of those things that's going to be with us here in 2016. And it's something that seems to be picking up steam. It is an election year. And I also know, too, that I'm competing with the State of the Union address. But here in Los Angeles, we're in a different time zone. So people are in their cars, and we can do it a little bit differently here. But the issue that I want to talk about specifically is addressing police brutality. And here in LA, just 24 hours ago, Chief Police Beck actually recommended an officer be charged, be brought up on charges for his excessive use with a homeless gentleman down in Venice. And for those of us locally here, we know about that case. And for a lot of our national listeners, this is a first. The ripple effect, we wonder how what's happened here in Los Angeles is going to play out across the country, because the way we've seen a lot of these cases has been that a lot of these officers, some of them have had discipline issues, that they've actually been allowed to continue to do their jobs with either no disciplinary action or just a brief, I'd say a brief suspension of a couple of days, and then back on the force. And there doesn't seem to be some kind of accountability. And Chief Beck's recommendation, he's not saying let's go ahead and do it, but it's definitely something that's very, very, very different, has never happened here in Los Angeles, and it doesn't appear to be happening across the country. And, when we think about what's going on in law enforcement, how there are two sets of rules and how people are being treated differently, you can see what's happening just right up the way in Oregon, how we've got trespassers on federal land where they have been treated completely different than any other set of protesters. In Oregon, they're armed protesters, whereas with the Occupy Wall Street movement, they were unarmed. And also with Black Lives Matter, they were unarmed. But individuals in those particular gatherings were accosted, where you have a band of men. The country has been quite looking at this from a humorous perspective with these individuals. But these individuals basically took over a bird sanctuary with guns, and they've been treated beyond polite to be trespassers. And then you have situations like in Chicago, which keep escalating by day as more information comes out, not only as part of a cover-up, but when you hear about the excessive force that a teenager withstood, who basically had a knife as he was walking away from an officer, and he took 16 shots, that's a little disturbing. And then just in a couple of weeks, the Tamir Rice incident, where the grand jury decided not to charge the officer for killing a 12-year-old. And then you think about incidents like this, and you just wonder, these are just the cases that we know about. We have individuals in this country that have known things like this that have been going on for decades. And now that we're in the age of social media, it seems that people are able to offer proof. And it just doesn't seem to, it just doesn't seem to change. And I think a lot of the debate stems from either they look at these incidents, because it's vogue right now to basically victimize the victims, and also to cast stereotypical judgment on individuals, in these incidents, whether they are committing a crime or not. The expectation is that a police officer is to be properly trained, and not only properly trained, but be professional at their job. And what we're finding is not only in the case of a lot of officers, that they have a history of not being very professional, and also not being very stable. And a lot of the cases that we have had have been incidents where a lot of the interactions have been race-based. The controversial procedure that a lot of police officers, a lot of police departments employ is what they call the broken window type approach, where basically they're profiling people. And in the 90s, it was a big thing where black and brown, particularly individuals, were profiled more than anyone. And I believe that there's become some kind of complacency in the sense of with law enforcement now, where there's a lack of professionalism and lack of accountability with officers. And you see just this past fall where even prominent individuals like tennis star James Blake was profiled in New York City by a New York City police officer. And, we have another prominent African-American who's our guest today, a celebrated musician, Reggie Pace. Just a little bit about Reggie. He's a co-founder of a band called No BS Brass. And, when you talk about not only a prominent individual, but you talk about productive individual and someone who's known, I mean, if you have taste, real taste in music, you know who Reggie Pace is. You are very familiar with his band. You know that his band has played in the Kennedy Center. I mean, you think about Saturday Night Live when you think of them. You also think of Reggie being profiled, being profiled in a good way in the entertainment industry as a musician, as I think the 40 under 40. And, this is a very articulate, very productive gentleman. And he basically had a situation with law enforcement, just like anyone else. And what we wanted to do today, and we wanted to talk about that and just kind of get his perspective, because a lot of you have been giving me feedback a lot about, there are criminals, and I don't think you really understand how pervasive sometimes in some areas of the country of how racial profiling works. And when you have someone who is of prominence, it definitely will open your eyes. And also, I think we have to stick to the main theme is that law enforcement needs to be professional. And Reggie, are you here? Are you on the line?
Yeah, I'm here.
Hi, Reggie. I just wanted to kind of tee up and introduce you to our audience. We've got some of our audience members who are very young millennials, 18 and 19 year old, and they're very diverse. And then Gen Xers. We have quite a few Gen Xers who know who you are. And I just wanted to thank you for joining me. And I just wanted to kind of talk a little bit and have you share with us your experience and just just talk about how you felt when, this happened. Because we have a lot of listeners who sometimes they just don't know. We have a lot of people when someone close to them hasn't experienced something, they really can't wrap their mind around it. And I'd really appreciate if you could just share some thoughts with us.
Oh, sure. I mean, I can just tell you, I can just walk you through it, and then it will kind of paint a picture of what it's like.
Absolutely.
You know, I mean, I just like walked out of my door, headed to the store, and it was dark, and I had turned just left to get out of my apartment onto my main street, and half a block away, a police officer came up and like was creeping beside me just as I was walking. And I looked over at him, then I kept walking because I just got out of my house. And then he turns the lights on, gets out of his car, asks me for my ID, and says, I'm stopping you because you wouldn't make direct eye contact with me.
Wow.
And, like, you have a shifty look, like you looked at me and you looked down, and that's why, don't you think that would seem a little suspicious?
Oh, no.
And I was like, oh, okay. You know what I mean? I'm just like, okay, let's get through this. So, you know, I give him my ID. And then, like, another cop comes with him, and that cop gets out of his car also, and so stands beside him. And he takes my ID, and he's like, well, we got a call saying someone was looking suspicious in a dark coat, which is two different things now in the dark.
Right.
Like, the reason why he was stopping me from walking. And I'm also, I can still see my apartment from where I am. So he takes my ID, writes something down, and he goes, you know, it's just dark, and we just have to respond to these calls. And then as he's saying that, another cop comes up from the other side, and two police officers get out of their car also, which is really weird. So I'm, like, surrounded in a circle. I think there may have been another one in his car, but there was, like, four of them out in the street, like, and surrounded in a circle. And everything about it just made me completely terrified. And just even when he asked me for my ID, I was like, oh, man, it's cold. You know, so I have a jacket on, and I'm worried, like, I'm going to have to stick my hand in this jacket to get my wallet. And, you know, there's already been incidents in which that's been enough to be like, oh, whatever, you know.
Right.
So I was, you know, it's just terrifying. So I give him my ID. He just, like, eventually just talks around in circles for a while. He gets cute for a second. He's just like, we're police officers. We don't hurt people. We don't bite. Like, you're really just being kind of weird. And then, you know, they tell me to leave, but they don't leave. They make me just, like, walk through where they are. And it's just, like, I was just so happy that, you know, it was fine. Because those situations can turn south so quickly. You know what I mean? You never know what's going on or if someone's going to try to rile you up or, you know, or whatever. So I just felt really... what's the word? I was just happy that fine. I left, and I like put it on Facebook that it happened.
And
all my friends were just like, "What?"
Yeah. So basically, you
really bizarre.
You know? you were stopped walking. You literally walking.
Yeah, for sure.
And you know, you bring up a point about when you're reaching into your pocket. When you were doing that, was there just one officer there or two, or did the whole three, were the whole three there?
There were just two of them there at that point.
Two. And is this a small town?
Two came after that. What's that?
Is this a small town you're in?
It's not that small. You know, this is normal. So, you know, Richmond, Virginia is not that small.
It's not rural. It's not rural.
Definitely not. It's
okay.
A city.
Okay.
For sure.
Because, and the reason why I ask that, because sometimes there, in a lot of these incidents, there's a lot of the opposition. When I say opposition, I'm talking about people who actually think that this isn't this isn't a problem.
There are
people who think, well, in urban areas, people have to be aggressive, or in smaller cities, this doesn't happen. And where you're located in Virginia, it's a moderate sized city. It's not like Mayberry RFD, where you've got Barney Fife running around. So it's not that country, but at the same time, it's not New York City. but it's a good moderate size where you've got diversity, you've got taxpayers who basically are paying to have a professional, police force. And I do know in your particular area, a college student also had an issue too, and an honor student at that. And, you know, and I think about what you just described, because you were just basically walking, which means you probably have a neighbor in your area that may not know who you are. But for some reason, I kind of don't think that was probably it. It was...
no way. I mean, it was like, you know, 2 minutes after leaving, they don't respond that fast. This is impossible. It's like, if that call was real, it wasn't about me. You know what I mean?
Right.
And they were just searching. But I don't know. It's just really bizarre to feel nervous just in general walking around on the streets. You know what I mean? And I understand that feeling. And everyone kind of understands that feeling of, like, if you're walking on a dark street and it just feels a little unsafe. But it's weird for that feeling to be coming from the ones you would supposedly call when something was actually unsafe.
Exactly. It's like, you should feel the complete opposite with the police. And and the fact, though, that he said that you didn't give him eye contact, that's kind of messed up. And that comes, there's nothing professional about that and about reasoning that or trying to justify that. And, when you described the ID thing, I went back to, I think it was the movie Higher Learning, the John Singleton movie with Ice Cube. Where's your ID? I don't know why I thought of that. I don't know. I don't know, because that and here in LA, that is a typical thing. And some people, as they give you your ID, they ask for your references too. And I just thought, you know, the guy just said that you didn't give him eye contact. And then he wants your ID. And then as the other officers came in, because this is what's confusing to me, because it's obviously you were not a threat. No one drew a weapon on you or anything like that.
No. They were just standing, like, waiting, you know, a couple of hands on the hips. Like, but that's how they normally stand.
Okay. Okay. Like, okay. And
it's just so, like, menacing for... him not to have wanted anything specifically.
Yeah.
You know, it was just like checking to see. And I just don't feel like that happens to everybody.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I don't
feel like it's all police officers. It just seems to be, since there's no, like you were talking about, accountability, it's really hard on the outside to know who to trust. You know what I mean? I'm sure they're really great police officers out there, but it's just tough to know what you're going to get. You know what I mean? Because
yes,
it's just happening a lot, you know,
not
someone that's whatever. These stories shouldn't just be coming from one part of, like, American people.
basically people of color, and mainly black and brown. Black and brown have the same story. You're right. I think that, and I think if you're going to stop people walking while black or walking while brown, stop walking while white and not giving eye contact too. And you don't hear that. You don't hear that.
You hear from, like, punkers or, like, skateboarders, but it's just such a small amount of people. It's just so weird for that to just be the stance that they're taking from the beginning, you know, is that you're inherently hostile. Just like the city itself is inherently hostile or something. And then, like, we're here trying to clean it up. It's really weird, as opposed to the street that I live on. Shouldn't it be safe for me also? And it's like, no. You know, it's such a weird dynamic, you know.
It is. And what you describe that in law enforcement, and it's a theory behind it. They call it the broken windows theory, that that basically started with New York City police, where basically the whole theory behind it is stereotyping, and it's introduced that into law enforcement. And you bring up something that a lot of our listeners have. We've done previous episodes on one in particular where we had a diversity expert, Dr. D'Angelo, where she talked about bias and natural bias, and it's so clear that in law enforcement today, and just based on your personal experience, that there is a bias, and particularly in the African American community. There's been a big shift from the 90s to today. In the past, it's always been, with the issues with police brutality, specifically in the hood, tied to individuals who lived a certain lifestyle versus African Americans and even other individuals of color outside of certain lifestyles. And there was a NIMBY effect, a not in my backyard kind of effect within the African American community. And then when you started hearing the proliferation of hip hop is when a lot of these stories started coming out. A lot of the stories, you think about, I know people see him now as an actor, but Ice-T back in the day, was one of the early rappers talking about this. And then here in Los Angeles, with Rodney King beating, that was actually the first time for definitely Generation X, because that was at the height of when Gen Xers were starting to come out of college, where that was on video. You saw that.
Right.
And you saw that's
right.
Where you started seeing what you were hearing years before by rappers and also, NWA, and thinking about that in our community, in the African-American community, there was a split saying, well, you've got individuals doing that are part of gang activities. Well, it's going to hype police up. And I think what happened was there was a level of complacency that happened in the 90s. And what's happening now is that you've gotten that stereotype has now been translated just across the board. Doesn't matter lifestyle.
Yeah.
And that's the realization that's happening. And individuals like yourself, you're not about that life. You're not about that life at all. You're completely in the opposite direction. And,
right.
And that's happening to you. And then you think about, individuals, and I know a lot the opposition where they, and I think this is where the whole snarky Blue Lives Matter came up with was, you have individuals like the individuals involved in the Michael Brown incident, both the officer and Michael Brown. And this is where the whole victim blaming starts to come
right.
in.
Exactly.
And, whether he was committing a crime or not, the officer still needed to be professional at apprehending the individual. And
at bare minimum, get to go to court.
Exactly.
Right?
So much
of stopping, the bare minimum, this is unconstitutional in the sense of not even getting a chance to have your day in court. They're just like deciding judgment.
Yeah, kill him. Yeah, kill him in the back. And it's similar to what happened here in Los Angeles with a homeless gentleman, which that's going to be something that's good. I think this year we're going to watch that where the chief has said the officer needs to be brought up on charges. We're going to now find out if this officer has a history of any other type of behavior, how he's been disciplined and things like that. And I think, though, in terms of the African-American community, there was a divide among us. And I think this is where now we've gotten to a point where this is capitulated to a point where, and I think that's where you've got groups like Black Lives Matter, where they've gotten frustrated with basically the whole okey-doke that has happened that has made this occur. And there's stunning silence in some areas of the African-American community, particularly in the political circles, which I find, every day I find kind of astounding that it's happening. But I think now with incidents where it's becoming much more pervasive, and stories like yours and James Blake that are hitting and people are hearing it, I think there definitely needs to be things in place where these officers are held accountable. Also, just describing what you've described to me and some of the interviews that I've conducted with law enforcement, kind of consultants and former law enforcement, a lot of officers have said they know who the bad guys are, but the system isn't set up where they can report someone, because at the same time they report someone, they could be depending on that person to save their life or to cover their life in some kind of call, you know, and that's kind of sticky. It really is. And you think the good guys are basically being prevented from doing their jobs properly. And then you've got the bad guys who are doing things like stopping you on the street where you're in your neighborhood, coming out of your home that you pay for, where you live. And it's just because you didn't give them eye contact, because maybe they feel like they got their self-esteem because they have a badge, you know. It's crazy. It really is.
I agree.
Yeah.
And I feel optimistic in the sense of, in the last few years, with like things like you talking and social media moving and everyone having access to cameras and things, and you know, I like me being able to talk to everybody that I've ever met is a very new thing, you know, as opposed to that story just being buried and just being another story. I mean, I would say tons of black people have a story similar to mine, in which they're just like hoping it was going to go okay, you know, and like just fearing what could possibly happen. But I think, like, us as a culture, as long as we keep talking about these things and actually holding it accountable in a cultural sense, in which we don't just forget about it, we keep talking about it until something gets done, then that's, like, 10 times better than it's been, you know what I mean,
yes,
than before.
Yeah.
Like, when you simply just weren't believed. And a lot of stories still just aren't believed. You know, they go, well, you probably must have done this. And that's the reason why this happened, which is like such an easy thing to say,
right,
to not think any situation is nuanced, you know, in that way.
Exactly.
But, you know what I mean? But yeah, I think that just the ability to feel like wherever you live is a safe place for you to live. It's not like I'm pro-crime. You know,
right.
I do not like crime, and I would like them to solve it, and I think that's what it should be, you know? But the whole, you know, this person's got to have my back, so I'll just look past bad behavior, is not the kind of talk that a company or any kind of team would have that was trying to be good.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? Like, even if you're on a football team and the guy was, like, really terrible, eventually you guys would want this guy to not be there so we can have someone that pulls his own weight. You know what I mean? This should be some sort of cultural idea of, let's weed out the bad ones. Let's keep the good ones and weed out the bad ones. I think that's the only thing. But since it would take the good ones' help to weed out the bad ones, which seems to be the line, you know, the blue line that is described, you know?
Exactly.
But, you know, I hope these kinds of conversations really hit a nerve, because that's the only thing that we can actually do, and like try not to escalate situations. Just make sure if anyone hears me that ever ends up in a situation like that, don't escalate it. You know, just like try to stay cool, stay calm, you know, live through it and be able to talk about it, as opposed to getting indignant and like getting erratic or making a sudden movement or anything like that. Don't escalate an already bad situation, which is a terrible thing to have to think about, but very real.
Exactly. Yeah, you make an excellent point. And that's actually one of the advice of former law enforcement. And pretty much, for the most part, a lot of people do that. Just what you described, people do that, and they still they find themselves in a situation. And I say that lightly, just to describe it. It's still brutality people are following the rules. We've had individuals across the country who have complied and were still killed by the police. And it happens. It goes back to accountability. And also, I think we're really going to have to continue conversations to really inject that there needs to be qualifications, qualifications. Sure. Just like you can't, to be a surgeon, you just can't roll in somewhere. You have to have proper education for it. And I think we've become a society where we're probably going to have to start not only requiring college degrees for individuals to be officers, but also much more deeper psychological testing.
If school is the solution, let's try that. But if school isn't the solution and you just need to have people who really want to do it that are nice, let's try that. I think we are long past the point of arguing about whether or not something needs to happen. We need to make some sort of change.
Yeah.
And, like, it's trending upward. It shouldn't be trending upward, you know?
Yeah, it's getting worse.
So, we have to, at the bare minimum, feel accountable for our own society and be like, hey, let's try a new idea. You know, if anything was like that, you know, car companies recall cars if they have a bad part. You know what I mean?
It's, right.
You have to fix problems. There's no reason to just feel embarrassed. I feel like there's an embarrassment of like, well, we thought that guy was a good guy, and now we don't want to say we made a mistake.
Right.
So let's try to figure out a way to fix this without changing any of the people out or something. You know,
you're absolutely right. You're right about that. You're right about that. I think the whole feeling of feeling bad about somebody, and you know, that's in the corporate business world. Getting rid of people in the corporate business world happens every day. You know, stuff happens.
Yeah.
People, it just doesn't work out. Some people aren't competent to do something, but you move on. And for some reason, when it comes to certain jobs that are tied to either that's taxpayer funded, and particularly something like police, there seems to be this whole this barrier to dealing with it. And I think and I think you've hit on something there where it could be self-imposed, this whole self-imposed ideology. Because, you know, to be a police officer, there's the expectation that you have to be on a moral high ground. Well, it's
right.
And it's obvious individuals who stopped you, they were working under a different moral fiber, whatever that was. That's about the best way you can call it. It was self-interpreted, but whatever that was they were operating on is a little bit different, and they seem to be entitled to do that. We do need to look at a new paradigm shift, and that paradigm shift, it needs to include accountability for it, and being blunt at saying you're not cut out for this. You're just not cut out for it. And if you
and money, and money. I'm not like anti the idea of police. Like, pay those guys enough money, you know, make it a desirable job for people that want to do it really great.
Yeah.
You know, they shouldn't have to depend on, you know, whether or not some politician does whatever, in order to do their actual job. It's like their utility. It should just work, just like water should just work. They
yeah.
should be paid well. They should be paid in a way that makes it a job people want to have. Same thing with, I feel that way about all kinds of jobs that, you know, nursing and teachers and all of those jobs, firemen. It's so weird that they aren't put onto the pedestal of a job that we 100% cannot do without. So I don't know why it's not looked at as something that is necessary in that way, like needs to be taken care of in a way that we're never going to not need teachers. So
exactly.
Why is it a job?
Yeah. And
why is it not paid for, really, you know?
And the same with police. We need police, but we need professional police, people who are really qualified to do the job, people who can, who are fit to do the job without bias and can be professional 100% of the time.
That's right. As opposed to, like, they still have their own money problems. They still have their own lives and things to deal with that may or may not charge a situation a certain way. Or, you know, they shouldn't even have, like, their job should be outside of that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, civil servants just outside of that. And, you know, because, like, the good police officers, you really can't replace them. They're, that job is insane. And
right.
they save tons and tons of lives all the time. You know what I mean? So, like, the idea that those guys get lumped together with a bunch of just, like, lowlifes and that they all have the same income bracket is something we got to deal with. We just got to get rid of the bad ones. That shouldn't be a controversial thing to say.
You're right.
Get rid of the bad ones, keep the good ones in. And reward the good ones for being good.
What we haven't seen at all in this narrative, and with any of these incidents, we've never seen police. I think a police officer association, or even the Black Lives, Blue Lives Matter. Folks, they don't make distinguishments between officers who have who are clearly unfit and the good guys. They just blanket everybody, and particularly these officer associations and even some of the unions. They blanket and they kind of. They haven't distanced themselves from unscrupulous behavior, and the only time that they will do something like that, and pretty much, and I've been watching the trends for the last 20 years. The only time that any organized pro police officer organization that will take a stand on something is when it has something to do, when it's so egregious in terms of organized crime. That is the only time.
Right.
Even here in Los Angeles with Rodney King beating, no peep, nothing from those
right.
associations, nothing. But then they did want to go after gangster rap music. You know, that,
right,
yeah, you know, that, yeah. that's been the most activity that they've done. They've never done anything to distinguish themselves or distinguish their organizations to the public to say, hey, you know, the good guys, we're here for the good guys. Because Blue Lives Matter so far isn't a national thing. It's been mainly a social media tag, but there is a nonprofit group in New York. And basically, they raise money for officers who have a hard time, and you know, the expectation is that, you know, when people give to groups like that, it's if an officer is down or if they're hurt on the job. But there doesn't seem to be any distinguishment between officers who have done something inappropriate, just like the officer who was just convicted of assaulting
right.
So many women, and it was known that he targeted women who he thought that the public wouldn't believe, and
yeah.
you know, but there out of all those organizations, no peep, no nothing about them, and that's kind of sad. It's very sad right. where we don't get that. And I think you make a great point where we need to have those conversations. And I think with a lot of the organizations out there that are kind of pointing out these egregious things, the narrative needs to be that these groups, officers need to start talking about how they're going to get rid of people. And that's what that's not what seems to come across a lot, particularly in police review boards, in cities, even major cities like Los Angeles. That kind of information isn't being shared with the public openly. You kind of have to dig for it. I mean, I'm a journalist and I have to dig for it sometimes. And sometimes you don't get anything. And get anything in terms of real answers, you'll get, well, it's a personnel decision. And it's kind of like, you know, well, you know, this is taxpayer funded. The people should know what's going on. And, yeah. you know, it's crazy. Now, in terms of your, because I know in terms of your situation and, you know, with your music, has this kind of given you this situation? And I know you've shared that you personally share this situation. Have you kind of looked at where you could take this message wise, just yourself in terms of your music and with your group?
Well, No BS, our most recent record is called Brass Knuckles. You can find it. And it definitely, I mean, we put it out in November, and it definitely already speaks to a lot of these situations that we're talking about and mm-hmm. how we need an accountability and we need to, like, at the bare minimum, be civilized. You know, we're all citizens. Let's deal with each other in a civilized manner, you know. Mm-hmm. We talk about that, and it's definitely was inspired by Freddie Gray, and, like, the artwork on it is, like, is a painting of a picture of the Baltimore situation that you can that just depicts that in a beautiful way, showing, because what it seems to me is that picture of the kids on top of the car that was shown everywhere was the only thing all over the news, as opposed to the murder that had just happened.
Right.
You know, like, the murder was the reason why the situation was happening, and, like, the situation was the only thing that was talked about. So, and that's, like, what you're talking about victim blaming and just ignoring why things are happening.
Right.
Demonizing who we see fit to demonize. So, you know, as an artist, that's definitely a thing that's going to go through all of the work that's happening around me, at least, and especially with this new record that we already made. But as far as my situation personally, only thing that I really want to get out of all of that is that, you know, that I had to do that, is that I'm cool and I'm lucky. You know, I'm lucky that nothing happened. And it could be your friend, or it could be your son's friend, or it could be your kid that went to the school with you. You know what I mean? It's just, it really is just people. It's not the situation in which it's only in these certain areas or people that are of a certain lifestyle. It's just the way you look is the reason
why you got
some
stuff.
Of these things are happening. And just some the empathy of that, I think, would go a long way. Of just, like, there's no need to pretend it's not happening. I don't know who that's for. I don't know who that is supposed to make feel better.
Right.
But instead, let's just attempts to solve some of the problems we have. We are intelligent and we have come a long way. And, you know, when my parents weren't allowed to drink at the same water fountain as everybody else. They're right. still alive. You know, they're 60. So right. the world has come a long way. And we can continue to make it go forward. We don't have to fall back on, well, they're doing the best they can. We don't have to fall back on, well, it's just too hard. It's a hard thing. Like, we as a group of people can decide to try to better our situation. And it's not too hard, you know. We have a voting system. We have our voices. And I'm including, you know, good police officers and military people and you know, I don't see, I also don't see it, what this has to do with, like, political ideology. I'm talking about anybody that wants to feel safe in their neighborhood should be down with, like, hey, let's make sure these guys are the best guys for us. And if they are, you know, and if there's some reason why they aren't doing a good job, let's see if we can solve that problem. And because I'm not demonizing them. I don't want to demonize them. If the problem is pay, if the problem is they don't have enough of them, if the problem is whatever, on the benefit of the doubt, we should at least see if we can make some of these things better. You know, at the moment right now, it's just this resistance to just the very idea that something needs to be done because of what I think just an embarrassment, just being like, oh, maybe we made a bad decision and let's fix it. That's not up for debate anymore. Like, some of these decisions were bad and we can fix them. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's just all it is. You know, we can fix some of, we can't solve every problem, of course, but some of these problems we can solve, you know?
So definitely.
Mostly.
Yeah, I think you're right where we need to fix these problems, and it should offset from political ideology because this is local based, and you know, local government is nonpartisan to begin with. But you know, politicians these days, you can have somebody who's running for running for city dog catcher, and if they think they can do a tie-in with whatever's going on nationally, they'll do it. I mean, you got what in Kentucky? You've got the woman who just says, "Well, personally, I don't believe in this type of marriage," and somehow she's got to hitch her wagon. So, and you know, and I think that's where a lot of, I call it dumb politics. That's where the dumb stuff starts, and it starts to dilute that. And you know, you get political ideology in, and then you get like you said so well, people who feel bad, but it's such a touchy subject that they don't know how to deal with that. And then you have the real thing that you should be dealing with, but you're not getting to that because it's so emotionally charged. And I think people just need to leapfrog the two little tiptoe things and just go head on into the issue. And the issue is more than likely you've got a police force that's not trained properly. You've got a police force that's more than likely using these outdated theories that stereotype and diversity, maybe in a lot of training, diversity hasn't been infused in a lot of officer training, and that definitely needs to be backtracked. And and one of our guests that we had, Dr. D'Angelo, she talked about how she's, what's interesting and what our listeners loved about Dr. D'Angelo was she is a white woman who does diversity training for white people. And one of the things that she said was, you know, overall, sometimes when you hear any kind of racial conflict, she said that the natural instinct is to kind of ball up and just say, "I'm not one of the bad people," and I think that's pretty normal for everybody. But in a case of an officer who might have a bias, some are openly biased, and then some have those stereotypical biases that they may not realize that they're doing, and they kind of buy into that. And sometimes, you know, with anybody who's done a job for so long, sometimes you just get sloppy. And
that's right.
And I think in your case, and you know, with someone saying that they didn't get eye contact, they definitely had some kind of stereotypical training.
That's
crazy. Even as a reporter, you know, if somebody doesn't give you eye contact, it's a lot of times it may have something to do with if you're on camera or something of that nature, something's going on. But
I mean, people have been arrested for giving too much eye contact.
Definitely.
They're totally silly. You know?
Definitely. Well, Reggie, I want to thank you so much for joining us and sharing your story. And, you know, with our listeners, you know, our listeners who know about you and then listeners who are hearing about you and your band for the first time, if people want to check, check you out, follow you on social media, what's your contact information?
I'm at Reggie Pace on Twitter, REGGIEPACE, and NoBSBrass.com, NoBSBrass, NoBSBrass.com. And you can find us on Facebook and Instagram. It's all NoBSBrass.
Oh, excellent.
But yeah, thanks for talking to me. It's cool.
Yeah, thank you so much. And listeners, again, you know, you can get social with me at Janet Foster on Facebook and at Janet D. Foster on Twitter and Instagram. And, you know, we'll be here next week, same time. And also, I want to thank Jeremy Hansen, our wonderful sound engineer. And ladies and gentlemen, we'll catch you next time. So have a wonderful week.
It's a fair question. It's a fair question. It's a fair question. I'm Vic Cohen, and it's a fair question. It's a